Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, putting on my seatbelt and raring to go this Friday afternoon. Tom Fairbanks, my buddy, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass. Tom, we held off 100, which is very good news yesterday.
We were knocking on the door.
Knocking on the door, 97 degrees, which I certainly can live with, even though it's about 9 degrees above normal.
Well, I saw 99.
Did the
maybe airport report 99?
Maybe it was 99, but we got close.
We were very
but
close.
But we didn't hit 100, which psychologically
it doesn't look like we're going to in the next few days either.
Which is great, because just as a point of comparison, a year ago today, we hit 106 for a record here in Tucson, which really added to a very bad year anyway, where the rain never came. It was the COVID year, so what else can you say? We are here in the Green Thing Zilkalo Village studio. It is Friday. It's the 7th of May, 2021. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's source for trusted news talk. The call letters KVOI. I'm in my 11th year right here on the radio, and we have our world Worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts that date back to the first Monday in January 2011. We have a lot of programs archived at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, we like to say thank you to Dylan Smith at TucsonSentinel.com, Dan Shear at the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. Dan's been so supportive, as has Dylan through the years. Jim Ninsel's been very supportive as well at Tucson Weekly, which is part of the Tucson Local Media Group. They also have Inside Tucson Business, Oral Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Joining us in our conversation on the live line as we talk about the RTA is Sarah Garrett Gasson, opinion page editor and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. How are you, Sarah?
I am doing well. I was noticing that it's quite hot, and there is a difference between 99 and 100, even if it's dismantled.
I think so, but it's the psychological difference. Let me ask: is Olivia the Wonder Dog with you in your home office, or did you feed her before the show and take her out of the area? So I think the last time we spoke, we did not hear from Olivia. No barking was very good. Is she asleep?
She is asleep, as she often is, and she's been kind of snoring, so there may be that in the background.
Yeah, okay, we'll be aware of that. Our Friday Focus interview, Farhad Moghimi is with us, the executive director of the Pima Association of Governments. Farhad is also has the same title. He wears two hats for the Regional Transportation Authority. 15 years ago, this month, coming up in a week or so, actually, the 15-year anniversary, Pima County voters passed a $2.1 billion 20-year regional transportation plan that includes improvements in four areas: roadway corridors, safety, transit, environmental, and economic vitality. More than 860 individual projects and services have been delivered to date. And this week, the RTA announced it will undergo its second scheduled financial performance audit. This is called for. The state statutes authorize the authority to create both a plan and tax proposal that voters approved in 2006. Farhad, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on, Bill, and hello, Sarah.
Hi.
Well, here we are, the three-quarters of the way. This would be in horse racing, entering the home stretch. How has RTA, the overall picture, how are we doing with the program?
We're doing really well. Thanks for your summary of the 15-year anniversary coming up. As part of that process, we are required, after the 10-year mark, which was back in 2016, and then now, 5 years later, required to go through a performance review process. The 10-year performance review was very strongly supported by the audit team. We are delivering projects on time, under budget, and we believe the 15-year review will be just as fruitful for our process. We actually encourage that opportunity to sit down and go through every project and identify our progress towards delivering the voter-approved plan. That is our goal. Our goal is to make sure that we prioritize what was in the original plan and make sure that we deliver all those projects as promised.
I mentioned 860. That's a lot of different projects in the portfolio. What's the total number that will be addressed that will be coming up now in the next 5 years before the 20-year termination?
So interesting enough, the 860 number, a lot of those are categorical projects. Categorical projects are identified on an annual basis, and as the revenue comes in, we budget for those projects. We've been able to do a lot of those projects early on in the process, especially because some of them were smaller, more immediate projects. Safety projects, for example, just to give you a sense, over 500 of those projects were safety improvements. Those are, you know, very focused areas and being able to deliver some safety relief on an immediate term.
Would that be like bus pullouts?
Bus pullouts were actually a separate category, okay. and they do fall under safety. So we promised to complete 200 bus pullouts, and we'll be able to do that. We also had over 80 pedestrian safety crossings. Those are the mid-block hawk crossings. We'll be able to complete those. We had 200 intersection safety improvements. Those are on target to be completed by end of the RTA program. And then we had sidewalks and bike lane projects, over 250 miles of sidewalks, 550 miles of bike lanes. And then the non-categorical group, those are the corridors that you mentioned earlier. There are 35 corridors that are named in the ballot, and those are all in various stages. They were phased over time, and we plan to complete all of them by 2026.
All right, Sarah, join our conversation.
I'm wondering about the process for the next phase of the RTA, if it will be renewed. How, you know, we're at the 15-year mark, but this sort of planning takes, you know, a really long time. So can you talk a bit about what the plan is going forward to renew the RTA? What are the practical steps that would need to happen?
Sure. As part of our planning process, we have a Citizens Committee. The Citizens Committee have been meeting for some time, and they have been able to establish some baseline principles and guidelines for how they're going to go about and prioritize any needs for the region. As you can imagine, And we've talked about this before on this show and various other opportunities, that we know the needs are great. The amount of funding that potentially could be brought to bear using RTA is a small fraction of what the needs are. So it's going to be a challenging job for them to be able to prioritize and identify what the needs are for the region. And then as part of that process, just like what we did last time, there's going to be extensive public involvement. We're going to go out and meet with as many folks as we can and inform people about what is being proposed at that time, and then obtain as much feedback as we can, make sure we integrate that feedback into the planning process. And then ultimately, it's up to the RTA board to make a recommendation on a plan that we could hopefully take the pulse of the community one more time before we can determine when the timing would be appropriate to go back to the public for a vote.
From a point of view of when an election is held, does that have to be, are there any constraints? Does it have to be in May or of a particular year? How does that work, Farhad?
No, the RTA is a taxing district. The taxing districts are authorized to call for an election anytime. It could be an even year or odd year. Obviously, there are logistics involved with holding an election, and there's cost associated with holding an election. So most likely, if you go out during a general election in November, the cost would be less. If you go during an off-season, then it'll be a greater cost. So all those issues have to be discussed with the board, and then that decision can be made at a later time.
Sarah, go ahead.
Will the priorities, I know that you're at the beginning of this, you know, the next process, but do you anticipate the priorities changing at all from road expansion and you know, increasing roads to more of a multimodal. I really don't like that word. It's just hard to say and it sounds weird. But you know, regional pedestrians, transit, things like that. Or do you think it will still be mostly predominantly road expansion, things like that, widening?
And road maintenance. I'll throw that in there.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that's huge.
Yeah. So just to put it in perspective, the current plan had roughly about $500 million for transit improvements and enhancing transit operations. That's extending evening and weekend hours. So that's roughly almost 27% of the current plan was for transit. And then another almost, I would say, 23% of it was for safety improvements and bike and pedestrian facilities, as I outlined earlier. And then the remaining 50% roughly was for corridor improvements. But even those corridor improvements, they all included safety improvements as well as pedestrian bike facilities within each corridor. So that's the current plan. Obviously, the next plan, it's anything is on the table, and that's why we have a citizens committee to help us identify what the priorities are and how do we develop a plan that hopefully gains the support of the majority of the voters in the region. Anything that we hear back from the community, hopefully will be, those are things that would be prioritized and identified in the next plan as well.
When is the draft plan? Do you have any idea when that might be available to the public for the second plan?
Yeah, we don't have a date yet. We're hoping within the next 12 months or so, we'll be able to have a project list from all of our member agencies so they can really get down to the business of identifying which corridors, which is required by state law, to identify corridors, and then within each corridor, identify what the needs are. So that's the first step in the process. And I'm very hopeful that, you know, within the next year or so, we can get to a point that we have a draft plan that we can have a conversation with the community on, is it hitting the mark, or does it need to be, adjusted further? And that opportunity is there. We have not set a date for an election. So we can modify and adjust as needed as many times as is felt necessary to make sure we get to the point that we get the support of the majority in the community.
And I know, you know, I've known you a number of years, and you're a very transparent guy, and this has carried over to this process. You are open to what people are saying about their transportation needs, are you not?
We are 100%. At the end of the day, it's the public that's going to vote on the plan itself, and it's their money. They're the ones that are investing in themselves, and it's completely a process to hear the public and make sure that we include what we hear from the public.
And this is a tax. The current tax is
The current tax is half cent.
It's
a sales tax.
Okay.
On goods and services, not on food, not on prescription drugs. It generates roughly about $90 million a year, and we've been able to prioritize and spend all those funds on everything that was in the voter-approved plan in 2006. So once a new plan is developed and a new tax is determined at that time, then the new plan becomes our essentially roadmap for what we need to spend the money on from that point forward.
So the new tax could be it could stay at a half cent, it could be a bit less, or it could be more.
So currently we're authorized to go up to a penny, and it could be any fraction of that.
And of course, obviously, if you go up to a penny, it's going to give more bang for the buck.
Correct. So using the same math, it could be roughly around $180 million a year versus the $90 million currently.
All right. Why don't we take a break right here so I can talk about my favorite bakery, Farhad, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery. I think we all like comfort food, especially after the very challenging year we've had. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle, and I also like their the Kringle's cousin. It's the Danish coffee cake. Kind of the same family, Scandinavian-type pastry, as my friend Tom Fairbanks referred refers to the Kringle, light and tasty multi-layered pastry. Works very well, and my particular favorite with the filling would be the almond paste. It's delicious, but they have some plenty of beautifully baked breads, pastries. They're open right now for lunch. The breakfast opens at 6:30 in the morning. Why don't you find out what all the excitement is about? Steve and his team up there have done such a great job, and really all bakeries and restaurants have had very challenging times, and Steve and the team have really come out of this, managed to do a very good job. And their website, monasdanishbakery.com, a place where you can order your bakery goods in advance. Of course, you can call ahead or just walk in to the bakery. And by the way, the Help Wanted sign is out if you're looking for a great opportunity. Ask Steve about a job at Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks. A modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this May the 7th, a beautiful afternoon. Farhad Moghimi is with us. Farhad is the Executive Director of the Pima Association of Governments. He's also the Executive Director of the Regional Transportation Authority. On our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, Sarah Garrett-Gasson, opinion page editor and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Farhad, the Pima Association of Governments, one of your tasks is overseeing the air quality. I mean, you can't obviously control. I guess you could try to at least keep our air quality as good as possible. But you kind of monitor that, and the federal government. You work with the federal government. How are we doing as far as air quality here in Tucson?
We're doing really well. As part of our responsibilities, we are charged with projecting how our travel patterns would impact our air quality. So we model our travel patterns and identify whether we're in conformity with federal guidelines, and we are. And then at the state level, we work with our transportation folks as well as our air quality folks at the Transportation Department and the Department of Environmental Quality at the Arizona State. And they encourage us to implement a project that's called a travel reduction program. And that program's been doing really well. As you can tell with the pandemic, obviously, a lot of folks started working remotely, and that's one of the principles that we promote, to work remotely if you can, as often as you can, to reduce travel, as well as vanpooling and carpooling. So those are some of the implementation projects that we have that have been very successful. Again, the pandemic was a short-term drop in vehicle miles traveled, especially in May, June, July timeframe, but we're now back to pre-pandemic levels when it comes to travel patterns.
The changes with people not, with the air quality, places like Kathmandu and Nepal, they saw Mount Everest for the first time in like 40 years or something during the pandemic. I mean, there were all these different things happening, places like over in New Delhi. I mean, there had never been better air quality. So that was one of the, there have been very few silver linings to the pandemic year, but places around the world that traditionally are horrible for air quality saw these huge reductions.
Exactly. And and we're definitely, you know, in a position to encourage people to work from home more often now that people have been able to do that and able to be productive. That's definitely one of the principles that we hope that people will learn from and continue doing. Obviously using transit more frequently, and if you're close enough to where you live and work, be able to bike or walk to reduce some of those vehicle miles traveled.
Let's bring our friend Sarah Garrett-Gasson back into our conversation. Go ahead, Sarah.
The RTA process, just to go back briefly, has been sort of held up as a model process because people came together from all different walks of life and worked regionally to make this happen. Are there any lessons learned from either that process or your involvement, you know, overseeing how it's been unfolded? Are there any lessons learned that you would advise a new RTA or an extension of the RTA plan to heed?
Definitely. And we touched on it early on. Really, the biggest lesson learned from 2006 plan was to make sure that you bring everybody to the table and you hear what the needs are and then be able to prioritize those needs. So, you know, at the time, we felt that we had a significant level of support from the community. It was roughly 60% approval. Which is, you know, definitely a good opportunity to learn from. And so there was another 40% that didn't vote for it. And so that's an opportunity for us to identify what other priorities can be included in the new plan that hopefully we can get greater than 60% support. As you can imagine, you know, there are many reasons that different folks may support a plan, and we definitely want to hear from all of them. So that's the biggest lesson learned, to continue to reach out and work with everyone. One of the concepts that we adopted early on was that you know, as long as you have a coffee table and a place to meet, let us know. We'll come over and meet with anyone, any individuals or any groups to really hear them out and make sure that we are integrating any input we get from the public into the planning process.
And even if the initial plan were to fail, there's nothing that says you couldn't reintroduce the RTA plan, correct?
Yeah, state law allows us to go back and obviously have a plan mm-hmm. and a tax on the ballot. So there would be two separate questions. Interesting enough, even back in 2006, there were people who voted for the plan but voted against the tax.
Huh.
So obviously you can't deliver a plan without the funding. Again, when we go back the next time, it'll be two questions on the ballot, one with the plan itself and one with the amount of tax to pay for it. And like any other election, you know, you hope that you included what you think the people would support and hopefully it's successful the first time around.
So they didn't want these people, obviously, they thought what you were doing with the laying out the plan, it looked great, but they weren't willing to pay for it.
Yeah,
with the half cent, or what? Maybe if you'd put a quarter cent, they would have said yes. I don't know.
So you know, like any other initiatives for taxes, you know, I think there are people out there, and this was we heard that back in 2005 that people felt that it should be paid for with revenues that you already have. You shouldn't have to tax for additional revenue, and that's their belief, and we respect that. And that's one of the reasons we want to go through this process to identify what the needs are, truly what the needs are for the region, and then identify a revenue source to pay for it.
What have been the big home runs for some of our listeners wondering in that 15-year period? What would be some of the marquee projects that you're really proud of, Farhad?
I would say we're proud of all 860-plus projects. It's definitely an improvement to how people move and access work and school. But, you know, some of the major ones that hopefully you've seen and noticed some improvements in your commute, the Twin Peaks and a traffic interchange at INA, as I-10, INA traffic interchange at I-10. You can see Halton Road improvements. Those are well received. We hear from a lot of people in the east side of town that it was a much needed improvement. And then you have improvements on La Quinada, La Cholla, Sarita Road. Every single corridor that we've been able to complete, we've heard great feedback from the public as well as the jurisdictions who were our partners in implementing those projects. A lot of those bring economic development opportunities as well, and you can see some of those benefits along some of these corridors already.
Are there any kind of projects emerging so far from the group, or have they gotten to that point that are looking at the next program?
So we've received over $2.3 billion worth of projects from our jurisdictional members for the committee to review and prioritize. So as you can see, we're already over the $2 billion mark with a $2.3 billion worth of
everybody's
requests.
Got their wish list, right?
Yes, and I think by the time we have everybody's list, we're probably going to be closer to that $3 billion list of projects, and then we still have to decide and prioritize it and then match the budget to pay for it.
Sarah, back with us. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't know what happened. I was just gone. Two questions. Will there be, in light of the Reed Park Zoo public input kind of fiasco, do you have plans for public hearings where people come, you know, it's kind of an open house thing? And then also, how are you getting information from Tucsonans with disabilities to make sure that our needs are included in the plans?
Great question. The current CAC members, at least two of them to my knowledge, represent the disability community, and we've been really proud to have them on the team, and they've been very active. Obviously, we'll continue to reach out to the public, as I mentioned earlier. We'll have opportunities for open houses. We'll have opportunities for meeting with individual groups, one-on-one meetings. All that information would be fed back into the process So throughout the process, we'll have opportunities to hear from anyone that is interested to learn more about the priorities and be able to identify what other parameters should be included in the planning process.
There'd be a lot of public, so I think bottom line is there'll be very well publicized public hearings.
Hundreds and hundreds. Back in 2005, we had over 400.
400?
Over 400 meetings with various groups and organizations and public hearings and town halls. We anticipate even more vibrant opportunity for feedback, especially with the pandemic. We've learned that people appreciate having the opportunity to connect remotely. It's a lot easier for them. So we're going to continue to use digital and remote opportunities for additional public involvement as well.
Going back to what you said, there were 4 out of 10 of the voters said no. Did you go back with some focus groups or follow up to try to figure if any theme had emerged? Obviously, one might be we don't want the tax issue.
That was the main theme. The main theme that came back was that a lot of folks felt that we should do with what we have, and they didn't want to pay more sales tax.
Yeah. But if we had tried to do with what we had, some of these high visibility projects that you talked about a few minutes ago would never have happened.
Exactly. And again, we totally understand and respect that. That's one view. A lot of folks believe that obviously we can tighten our belt and be more frugal and do everything that's needed with the resources that are available. And that was not the case at the time. We all knew that. Even now, if you look at our long range plan, and this is on the PAC side of the business, when we look at our long-range planning, what the needs are for the community for the next 25 years, we have probably less than 50% of the revenue available to do the things we believe we need. So that's very common that there are people that would not approve additional taxation. So that was one theme. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that really I think was clear at the time was the impact on existing corridors. A lot of people felt at the time that the existing corridors should be left alone and there shouldn't be any impact to those corridors. And that was something that obviously we had to go through a process to identify that anything that would be done to those corridors hopefully would be a benefit, hopefully would not only benefit the movement of the people through the corridor, whether it's transit, walking, biking, or with cars, it should also improve the land use opportunities as well.
Were they worried about kind of a quasi freeway, do you think? Was that
No, not necessarily. I mean, a perfect example, was some of these corridors that for the longest time they were like a 5-lane corridor,
right,
with multiple access points along the road.
Okay.
Grant Road is a good example of that. And they just felt that, they may lose access for some reason if they were along the corridor.
Okay.
And in some cases, because you're losing that center lane and putting a median in, they were concerned about turning movements and access to land uses.
All right, Sarah, before we let Farhad go, do you have another question?
Do you get as frustrated with road construction as any other driver?
Of course, and we try to coordinate as much as we can with all of our partners to make sure that they're well coordinated and everyone's informed. Again, unfortunately, one of the silver linings of the pandemic was that the traffic volumes were so low that we were able to get a lot of those construction projects done and with the least amount of impact on the traveling public. But definitely, I think that's something that we can always continue to improve on and try to make it as seamless as possible for a traveling public and safe.
And you're open right now to anybody calling you, emailing you with questions or suggestions about what they would like on the plan. If people want to get in now, they can do it.
Yes, we do have a comment line on our website, rtamobility.com, or if you can go to the PAG website, pagregion.com, either one of them, there's opportunities for people to put a request in for us to come and meet with them and have a conversation or submit your comments. And I would be more than happy to meet with anyone anytime, anywhere. As I said, my only criteria would be to have a place to put my coffee cup down.
And bring Simona's Danish show.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
All right. Farhad Moghami, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Sarah, please stick around. I've got a few things to talk with you about as we continue in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. My name is Bill Buckmaster, and we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our thanks to Farhad Moghami, who is wears two hats. He wears the hat of the Executive Director of the Regional Transportation Authority and the Executive Director of the Pima Association of Governments. With us on the live line, Sarah Garrett-Gasson, the opinion page editor and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, accompanied by the wonder dog, Olivia, who's been very good. Olivia must be sound asleep, snoring away in the other room.
Well, she did have a brief barking eruption, oh. But it was during the break.
So oh, good.
She must know.
That's good. Good. So she's apparently settled down. I am so happy that you asked that question. And it's very appropriate because there will be an extensive public hearing process going forward as the RTA seeks the reauthorization, the Regional Transportation Authority reauthorization for another 20-year plan. And that was something that with this whole, how do I characterize it? dust up, that's being kind, a dust up over the Reed Park expansion that people felt, some of them that were for, you know, Save the Duck Pond, that they just had not been informed or didn't know what was going on with the expansion. And the zoo really did do their part. They had publicized, they tried the best they could to publicize the hearings. But this is something that the RTA will have to be very conscious of.
Yeah, one of the things in looking at some of the listing of meetings that the zoo folks had with Tucsonans about the expansion ideas is they were small meetings or one-on-one meetings, mm-hmm. maybe with a group or an interested person. And so that's why I asked Farhad about public hearings where people can just come see what it is, you know, more of an open house.
Right.
And situation.
I think that's they're very cognizant of that. And I think he said there were 400 before the last authorization. He said some very interesting things in the interview too about this particular group, the 40 percenters, who, you know, there were some of them that thought, you know, yeah, I really we need to fix our roads, but they're not willing to pay for it, and that they believe that you only use the money you already have in the bank and don't, you know, do additional taxing. So it's going to be hard to change some minds in that area, Sarah.
Absolutely. There are always, I mean, we've both been covering local government long enough to know that there are always people who will say one of two things, or maybe both. The, I had no idea this was going to happen.
Right.
And why didn't you ask me?
Yep.
And then I really want whatever it is, usually roads, things like that, to be better, but gosh darn it, I pay too much in taxes already. You should figure it out because you're all bloated and fat cats, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And then they blame, they'll say, well, why didn't the radio station cover it? Where was the Arizona Daily Star? I don't remember seeing anything about this in the Star. So you got that too.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we all live in our own worlds and, being people who, you know, we pay attention to these things for a living, of course, it's going to be on our radar more because that's what we do. And part of, I think, local journalism's obligation is to go to those meetings and provide that information because, you know, most average people don't have 3 hours to spend at a city council meeting or whatever. But the idea that you can, people have ideas and beliefs that aren't necessarily matched with facts and data. So the belief in bloated government, could some parts of government be better? Absolutely. Does that mean everything is terrible and wasteful? No. It's that getting past the ideas and the perceptions to actual data is the challenge of any public institution.
Sarah, what do you have coming up in the paper over the weekend?
Well, talking about the RTA, we have a piece from Cy Shore, who will be a familiar face to many Tucsonans. He was the founding board chair for the RTA back in the day, and so he's writing about some of the progress, how things have been going, the success of the regional approach that that people point to as kind of the hallmark of the RTA. We also have an interesting piece coming up from Fitz, of course. It's a really fun, cute piece about bees. And then we have a piece that's on Saturday. On Sunday, then, we have SciShore, and we have a piece from a PhD doctoral student at the U of A who's writing about a kind of a new approach to solving the scourge of gun violence. And it's an interesting sort of applying academic theories to a very real problem.
You said his piece is about bees?
Yeah, bees. He had bees. Fitz had bees in his yard.
Oh.
And so it's about the woman who came out to the beekeeper who came out to rehome them.
We've done that before at our household, and it worked. It's not an overnight solution. It took a little while, but we got them out.
But it's very charming. It'll be hard to find fault with this one, whether you love Fitz or you hate him.
And quickly, is it my eyes, which it could very well be, but is the print different at the paper?
There has been kind of it looks different because we've moved to a design center.
Okay.
So everything is sort of standardized. It's not being designed in-house any longer. So yeah, it does look different. The headlines are a little large sometimes, but all those sort of things are being worked out with the central design center. So
it's a work in progress.
Yes, but the important thing I always tell people is, yeah, the headlines may look different. They may be a little large for your taste, but pay attention to the really high quality local journalism that those headlines are announcing.
I am of the age where I will take the large headline, believe me. All right, Sarah, have a great weekend. Always good to catch up with you, and we'll see you hopefully soon in the studio as everybody's pretty much vaxxed up. I hope people are getting their vaccinations because we have here at KVOI. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thanks, Bill. Have a good weekend.
You too. All right. The Buckmaster Show continues. Matt Russell, Weekend Watch, next.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
All right, time to stir it up, baby. Weekend Watch presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do, and it is cooler over in Silver City. Believe me, usually about 10 to 15 degrees cooler. It's 83 degrees right now at the noon hour, and their high is going to be, looks really good next week. Upper 70s. So make that three-hour road trip. Start your planning now. Visit southwestnewmexico.org to visit Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Here he is, longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist, all-around nice guy, Matt Russell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Doing real well. In the mood for some Thai food?
Yeah, you got it. You know, you might remember last September, Bill, I reported on Weekend Watch about the opening of Tucson's newest Thai restaurant called Tuk Tuk Thai on Campbell Avenue. Well, thanks to Buckmaster listeners, business is booming.
Whoa.
So much that they're opening their second Tuk Tuk Thai location tomorrow at 12125 North Oracle. Now, the owner operated two Thai restaurants in Portland before coming down to the Old Pueblo. And his take on Thai cuisine pays homage to the flavors and culture of Thailand. Wok fried dishes, rice and noodle dishes, curry, a ton of spice awaits you at the new Tuk Tuk Thai tomorrow.
You have judged many taco contests, and we've got our own festival in Tucson.
Yeah, we do. We hop from Thai to tacos. Highly acclaimed purveyors of the iconic foldable food will convene at the Tankaverde Swap Meet tomorrow for the Tucson Taco Fest. It all gets underway at 11 in the morning when local chefs dish out dozens of different taco styles. Of course, beer and live music will be there as well. More than 100 product vendors for shopping. Admission is free. You just pay for your food and drink, of course. But $25 will get you VIP admission, which includes a t-shirt and premium seating in the VIP area. All the information on the Tucson Taco Fest Facebook page. Check it out and head to Taco Town tomorrow.
Any suggestions to honor Mom with a lovely dinner?
You know what? It's one of my favorite days of the year. We get to do some double doting on Mom. Why not give her a meal to remember? For those that want to take her out, check out what Harvest is planning in Oro Valley, a menu anchored by mahi-mahi with a red bell pepper and pumpkin seed pesto. Yeah. If you'd rather invite Mom over to your place in the comforts of home, many restaurants offering to-go delicacies. Feast is doing some great things, featuring a New Zealand King Salmon Wellington with artichoke hearts all wrapped in puff pastry. Now, whether you go out or stay in, of course, Bill, reservations are a must. So call your favorite eatery right now to make plans for this special day for Mom.
Have a great weekend. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, cheers, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by Chris Stefan. On behalf of everybody, including Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing, everybody at Bustos Media, have a great weekend, everybody.